welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to episode number 8 of the Essential Tennis Podcast. This podcast is dedicated to everybody who wants to improve their tennis game. I'm here to help you out as you try to improve your strokes, as you try to improve your strategy and your mental game, and also any help you might need with equipment, strains, and frames along the way. I'm trying to make a full-service podcast here dedicated to tennis players everywhere to help make you a better player. Before we get started today, I definitely want to thank everybody who's been downloading the podcast. And also a big thank you to everybody who's been writing in questions. We had another record week here at the Essential Tennis Podcast. Again, our questions doubled that I received. Lots of good questions this week. And this podcast, again, is going to be one of the longer ones that I've done thus far. And also record number of downloads this month. So far in May, I've gotten around 500 downloads of the podcast, which I think is great. It's becoming more popular every week, and that's a big encouragement to me. That really makes it worthwhile, the time I'm putting in to do the recording and the mixing, and also to write the blog as well. So thank you very much to everybody who's listening. You're the people who make it possible, and I'm here to help you guys. Without you guys, there is no show. So it's great to see everything continue to grow. All right, two more quick things before we get to our questions today. First of all, I have an announcement to make. As of this morning, today I'm recording this on Monday morning. As of this morning, EssentialTennis.com is going to be up and running. This is a website I've been working on for a little while. The podcast and the blog, they're ways that I've been trying to put my time in on the web and help people to get myself out there and to get myself some exposure. And the website is going to be another way that I'm going to be doing that, another way that I can get my information out there and try to help as many people as possible. So go to www.essentialtennis.com to check out the new Essential Tennis website. On the website, I have featured the podcast and the blog. You can view and download all the archived podcasts right from there, and there's a description of each week and what you can find in each podcast. You can subscribe to an RSS feed of the podcast and of the blog, as well as other links to take you to iTunes so that you can view the content there as well. Also, other features I'm working on for the website specifically. Coming up very soon, I'm going to have another writer working with me, and he's going to be reviewing equipment. And so he'll be there to help you guys with your equipment choices as far as frames and strains and clothing and shoes, anything else. He's a real equipment guru. He's a master racket technician, and he really knows what he's talking about. So he's going to be writing an equipment article every week, helping you guys out with your tennis equipment. I'm going to continue to do instruction and strategy and technique. And also other features on the website are going to include in the future video tennis lessons as well as a pro shop as well. I haven't worked out exactly what's going to be in the pro shop, but I'm talking to a couple different people. I may eventually start carrying product, meaning rackets and other equipment that can help you guys out. And there's going to be other things as well as I keep working at it. But definitely drop by, send me some feedback, let me know what you think of the website. I'd love to get any kind of comments or questions. There's a separate page there for sending feedback to me. So use that, or you guys are always welcome to send me an email directly at Ian, I-A-N, at EssentialTennis.com, Ian at EssentialTennis.com. Lastly, before we get to our questions, I have a favor to ask of you guys, everybody out there listening and who has listened thus far to the podcast. I would love it if those of you who have found this podcast helpful, head on over to iTunes and leave me some feedback on the iTunes Music Store. I want to continue to grow this podcast. I want it to be the most popular tennis instruction podcast on iTunes. Currently, one person has been kind enough to leave me some positive feedback, and I want that to get a lot bigger. I want the podcast to continue to grow, and so to get more exposure, I'd love it if you guys could help me out by heading on over to iTunes and leaving me some positive feedback there to bump up the rating on the Essential Tennis Podcast. Right now, the number one tennis podcast has 9 comments. By the end of the week, I would love to have 10. I think you guys can do that. And if you could help me out by heading over there and completing a couple comments for me, that would be really great. I'd appreciate it a lot. Okay, let's go ahead and get to our first instructional question here on the Essential Tennis Podcast. Our first question today comes from Steve. I believe Steve has been a question asker in the past. His question has to do with the backhand volley. He writes and says, I'm having issues on the backhand volley. It seems like if I have to take a shot to the backhand when I am at the net, I have trouble if I get rushed. I think most of the issue is that I am much more comfortable on the forehand side. I struggle with getting my racket ready to punch the backhand volley. If I have time to set up, I usually make a good volley, but those reaction volleys always get me. Well, I sent a couple emails back and forth with Steve. The first thing that came to mind for me, and I see this all the time in my teaching, is people will come to the net and they have a different grip for their forehand and backhand volley. And typically speaking, they will wait in whichever volley they prefer. They'll wait in their ready position with the grip for that volley. Typically, I find that most people like their forehand volley a little bit more. So a lot of times players will come to the net, get in a ready position, and their hand is on the grip waiting for a forehand. And when that ball comes to their backhand side, one of two things are going to happen. Either they're going to try to avoid the backhand by moving their feet and trying to run around it, which is awkward a lot of times, and they don't have enough time to get all the way around the ball, or they're going to have to take the time to switch their hand over to the other side and change their grip, and that cuts down on a lot of your reaction time. Guys, the closer you get to the net, the less and less time you have to react to the ball. So doing something like having to switch your grip back and forth from forehand to backhand really is something you want to avoid as much as possible. You should be trying to use one grip for both sides. It's very important because the closer you get, the less amount of time you have. And that's good for you because you get to rush your opponent. However, it can also work against you as well if you're not properly prepared to hit both sides. So I sent an email back to Steve and I asked him, I said, you wouldn't happen to be switching grips by chance, are you? And he said that he's using Continental for the forehand and slightly more of a, quote, hammer grip on the backhand. And then he reiterates in that email, most times I feel like I get caught on the backhand side and end up popping the ball up instead of punching it. So I wrote back and said, it's probably because of your grip change, and I highly recommend that you guys use a Continental grip for both sides, your forehand and your backhand volley. It might seem a little awkward at first for those of you who are used to switching. However, in the long run, it will make your volleys better. As you get used to it, and as you learn how to do it correctly, your net game will improve because it will increase your reaction time. You'll have more time to hit the ball instead of worrying about which grip you have. Lastly, Steve wrote back and asked one additional question. He said, I will try and keep one grip for volleying next time I play. Would you recommend keeping my wrist supinated or pronated when in the ready position? Steve, my answer to that is I would recommend putting your hands in front of you in your ready position with your dominant hand in a continental grip. Your hands should be in front of you. Your elbows should be right about at your side. And I want you to just put your hands in whatever position in terms of rotating back and forth. Whatever position is most comfortable for you is absolutely fine. Typically, I have beginners start off with their racket on edge right in front of them so that their racket is perpendicular to the line of their shoulders. And that way, all they have to do is make a turn with their body, a unit turn with their core to one side or the other. And keeping that continental grip, your racket is automatically facing forwards. Whether you turn to the right or to the left, you're ready for both sides with that grip. So I would say just keep your hands relaxed, keep your dominant hand in a continental grip, and keep your hands in front of you so that as you come to the net, you're ready for both sides. And as I said before, make sure that you turn to the side to prepare your racket. Don't turn and move your arm one way or the other. Your body should be turning to get the racket facing towards your target. Obviously, any small adjustments with the racket face to face your target, you can use with your you can do that with your hands or with your arms, but your first motion should be turning your body to whichever side the ball is coming to. Steve, thanks a lot for the question. It's a great question, and I hope that helps you out. Do not be discouraged if you go out to use a continental grip on both sides and it doesn't feel good right away. Don't expect it to feel good. It's going to be different. Just realize that in the long run, if you get used to it, it's going to help you out. It will make your volleys better in the long run because you're going to be more prepared for both sides. All right, our next question comes from Tomas. Tomas, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. And he is asking about his ground strokes and making top spin. I'm going to paraphrase the first part of his email. He describes to me that he just recently got back to playing tennis after taking about a 10-year break. He's 40-plus years old, and before he took a break, he was using an older, heavier racket, a Dunlop 150G. And so he was used to a small, heavy frame, and now that he's getting back into tennis, he's having problems hitting the ball too powerfully because, you know, rackets nowadays, as compared to 10 years ago, make a little bit more power with your swing. And so I'll jump into his email here right about in the middle. He says, I cannot just hit flat anymore with my Eastern grip. Way too powerful because I have a full swing. So I need more topspin. I feel that switching to a semi-Western grip would probably not be wise for my age. Can I stick with Eastern forehand and still produce good topspin? It's really hard for me to know how. All videos I have found on the internet shows Western topspin swings. I'm sorry, he said a semi-Western topspin swing, not Western. Tomas, good question. To answer your question briefly or simply, the answer is yes, you can hit topspin with an Eastern grip. Let me explain this to you. I've gone over this on a previous podcast, but I'm certainly happy to explain it again. It's very important to understand how topspin is made. Topspin is made when your racket face makes contact with the ball, perpendicular to the ball and perpendicular to the court, meaning you're meeting the back of the ball with your racket face flat and your racket is perpendicular to the ground. When your racket meets the ball with your face flat and it's moving in an upward direction, that's what makes the ball turn end over end towards the other side of the court. So topspin is created from an upward swing and keeping your racket face flat. So basically, the more you turn your hand towards the bottom of the grip, the more you move towards a Western grip, the more your racket face closes. The more your hand moves towards the bottom of the grip, the more closed naturally your racket face is. And the more closed naturally your racket face is, the more potential you have to accelerate in an upward direction to make rotation on the ball. if you swing upwards at the ball and your racket face is open, even slightly, you will hit the ball too far. And so, Tomas, what's happening here is you're used to hitting with a relatively horizontal swing. And back in the day, that's predominantly the direction that everybody swung. Back in the wood racket era and beyond, once metal rackets started first becoming popular, people used more of a forward swing, either a slice forehand or backhand, which is mostly horizontal, and a little bit of a downward motion at contact, or a drive, which does have upward swing in it. The racket does finish high, but it's mostly a horizontal swing. So being used to more of a horizontal swing, that means your racket face is a little bit open. And when you try to swing upwards at the ball to create topspin and your racket face is a little open, it's going to go too far. You're going to hit it, quote, too hard. It's not actually too hard. It's just in the wrong direction. We don't want the ball to be lifted from underneath with an open face. We do want the ball to be lifted, but with a closed face, with a flat face at contact, so that the ball is spun, so that you make it rotate rather than just striking it upwards into the air. So the reason why heavy topspin hitters use a more extreme grip is so that they can swing upwards more quickly and keep the racket face flat at contact. The racket face is perpendicular. It's not facing down towards the ground at contact. Now, all that being said, is it possible to hit topspin with an Eastern grip? And the answer is yes, it is possible. It's not, it doesn't lend itself quite as naturally towards hitting heavy topspin, but it's certainly doable. As I teach throughout the week, I use all kinds of different grips. When I feed and when I'm playing a lower level of tennis, like a 2-5 or 3-0 level, I use continental for everything, because it's very easy to just direct the ball back into the court towards wherever I want it to go. And it's easy to hit relatively slow and relaxed, and the ball still goes over the net. As I start to accelerate more, as I start hitting with students that are a little bit higher skill level, I will slowly start switching my grip a little bit farther over. And to hit topspin with a 3-5 or maybe a 4-0 player, I'm still pretty close to continental, which I'm comfortable with. And Tomas, after reading your question earlier in the week, I purposefully experimented with this. I'm able to hit topspin with a continental grip. Now, it's not nearly as much topspin as I can hit with my playing grip, which is a semi-western, but it's certainly doable. You can play a relatively high level, 4-0 or 4-5, with continental on both sides if you simply know how to control your swing. So what you need to do is practice getting your racket face a little more closed with that Eastern grip, and you need to start working on starting lower with your swing and swinging upwards more steeply at a vertical angle, swinging upwards towards the ball. If as you swing upwards, the ball floats and it goes too far, then you need to take your hand and turn it and close it a little bit more so that you're hitting the back of the ball and not underneath the ball, which will cause it to float. Think of it as a ratio. The more your face closes, the more you need to swing upwards. The more your face opens, the more horizontal of a swing you need to hit so that the ball doesn't go too far. An upward swing is good because it makes the ball curve. That's topspin. And so it's good for consistency. It's easy to attack and still keep a high level of consistency. Lastly, Tomas, I just want to tell you that at 40 plus years of age, don't think that it's impossible for you to learn to switch your grip and go a little bit farther over. I teach several guys of that age and older who I have taught to hit heavy topspin off both sides. Now, I will tell you, it took them time. You know, they had to learn the different direction of swing. When you're used to swinging relatively straight forwards, it's hard. It's very different to swing upwards. But don't think it's impossible. If turning to a semi-Western grip means that you can make topspin more easily, you can do it. If you put the time in and the effort, it's certainly more than doable especially since you have a tennis past and you have some experience. I'll assume you're a pretty good athlete. You could definitely do that if you wanted to. Or you could make topspin with an Eastern grip too. Choice is yours. Hopefully I describe the technique well enough for you so that you can get out and practice and try to do what I'm describing. In the future, I plan on having a topspin video instructional lesson on my website that describes all this with visual cues as well. If you have any further questions, please let me know. Thanks very much for writing in and for being a listener. Our next question is from Ahmed. He asks, what are some books about tennis that you have read that have helped elevate your gameplay to another level, either mental-wise or in terms of mechanics? Well, I haven't done a lot of reading on technique and mechanics. As I was learning how to play, I definitely relied heavily on my coach. I took private lessons from one person and one person only as I was growing up. He was really a role model for me and just loved to teach. And he's really a big reason why I'm doing today what I do. So my technique and my mechanics learning pretty much came from one source, my tennis professional growing up. I never really went around to other sources to search out technique advice, like a lot of you guys are doing, coming to me and asking questions. I didn't really look to books for that sort of thing because I was lucky enough to have a great tennis professional that I saw personally. And he really was the person who shaped my game in terms of technique and knowing how to hustle and play hard. And I just learned so much from him. Now, mental game is a completely different subject for me. After high school and going into college, I had a lot of problems with my mental game. I would become very, very frustrated with myself. My expectations were very, very high. And so I have done quite a bit of reading on the mental side of things. Actually, I take that back. Back in high school, I read two mental books that I enjoyed a great deal. One is kind of a classic called The Inner Game of Tennis. That's an older book, but very good. Lots of good information in there. The second one is Winning Ugly by Brad Gilbert. And that one's a very popular book as well. He was a player who was unconventional and just found ways to win. He was mentally tough, figured out how to get inside his opponent's heads, and gives a lot of good advice there on how to be mentally tough and to be confident and how to figure an opponent out and win without maybe the best technique. And that's one thing that's really fascinating about tennis is the person with the prettier strokes oftentimes doesn't win. If you're a good competitor, if you're a good athlete and you know how to fight and grind it out, you can be very successful at tennis, even without the best strokes in the world. It happens at the professional level all the time, where somebody just knows how to grind it out and they hustle more, they work hard, and you get rewarded by that in tennis. You don't have to have perfect technique. Certainly good technique is priceless and it can help you out a great deal, but without working hard and without being mentally tough, it's just one side of the coin. Lastly, my favorite tennis book in terms of the mental game, and definitely my favorite tennis book overall currently, is called Mental Tennis, and that's by Vic Braden. Vic Braden is a sports psychologist and just an incredible book. He talks a lot about the biology and the physiology of actually learning strokes. He talks about being nervous and what causes nerves and how to get over that. That specifically is why I purchased the book in the first place. I was having problems with nerves in college, and I was having problems with anger in college as well in my competition. And he really covers everything from nerves to anger to how you learn tennis. All that stuff is covered. And it's very, very informative. I pretty much make that my number one recommended book whenever a student asks me about what to read. And certainly when it comes to mental topics. So, Ahmed, hopefully that helps. Sorry I don't have really any suggestions on technique and mechanics, but if you go to Barnes & Noble, there's a lot of books out there. Just look for one that seems to write to your specific level. And like I said, there's a lot of good books and lots of stuff that can be learned just from reading. Thanks very much for the question. I appreciate you taking the time. All right. Our next question comes to us from Sean. And he has a great question about part of the mental game. He writes to me and says, "What do you think about during a point? I find that if I consciously think, I end up not making decisions fast enough. Therefore, between games and sometimes points, I'll review the last point and think of general strategy, like hitting cross court, approach on a short ball, or outlast him, keep the ball safely in play, etc. Once I set up to serve or return, I start repeating a mantra, and that seems to help. My mantra for the past year has been, watch the ball, move your feet. This seems to emphasize the two most important things in setting up for a successful shot. Is there a better thing to be thinking about, or should my mind just be totally silent?" Sean, that's a really good question. And this is one of the things that just makes tennis very difficult. It's very hard mentally. The better and better you get, the tougher it is to kind of keep your mind quiet, as you say. And it should be quiet. One of the hard things about this is that you want to certainly be aware and conscious of what's going on around you. You want to know what's happening in the match. If you're winning, you need to know why. If you're losing, you need to know why. And you do mention this. You say that between points and between games, you will kind of stop and take stock, take account of what's going on, and realize what's happening in the points and in the games. And that's great. That's an awareness that needs to be there. You have to know in terms of strategy and in terms of what direction the match is going in, what's going on. The more aware you can be of why you're winning or why you're losing, the more you can either repeat the winning steps that you're making or get rid of the losing ones and continue to be more and more successful against each individual opponent. The thing about tennis is every time you play somebody new, you have to figure out a whole nother game. And that's, you know, that's generalized. It might not be completely different, but everybody's got different strengths. And so your job as a good player is to get out there and be aware and conscious of what's going on in the match. Now, that being said, there are certain things that eventually we want to be completely unconscious of. The better and better you get at tennis, the more and more of your technique we want to be doing automatically without any conscious thought, without actually thinking through it. You say something in your email that's very good. It's great that you noticed it. And you say that if you actually think about your technique, you end up not making decisions fast enough. And that's exactly correct. You cannot be aware and conscious of every little thing your body does. If you try to control each and every little movement of your swing, you're just going to completely break down. That needs to become muscle memory. The only way a stroke can become muscle memory, or a footwork, or any other kind of movement, any kind of swing or stroke or movement on the court, the only way to make it muscle memory is through repetition. And I mentioned a second ago, mental tennis, Vic Braden talks a lot about this, what it takes to actually make something a habit and to make it muscle memory. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, and you have to be dedicated to it. The more time you put in on it, the more automatic it becomes. And the more automatic it becomes, hopefully the more we can just forget about it and do it automatically. because you don't have time to do all these little movements and motions and things with your feet, setting up close stance, open stance, topspin or slice or drive or lob or drop shot or cross court or down the line, whatever. You can't sit there as the ball is coming towards you and wonder to yourself, all right, what should I do here? Certain things need to be automatic, and technique is one of those things. You cannot be conscious of technique while you're making your swings. So your ultimate goal as a player really is to do everything automatically. That being said, you know, we realize we're human here, and it's not going to be possible to make everything perfect and repeatable, and you just go out there and you're a robot and you perform everything just the way you're supposed to. And that's why it's challenging. That's why tennis is hard, because you have to do these things on the fly and you have to try to do them correctly and well. And it's very difficult. So basically my answer to you is some things be aware of, and that being what your opponent is doing to beat you or what you are doing to beat your opponent. You need to be aware of their strengths. You need to be aware of their weaknesses. And I think what you say about doing that in between points is excellent. That's when you should be really thinking about that. Whenever possible, you don't want to actually be thinking about that during the points. You want to be aware of it between points, and then you go set up for your serve or set up for your return, and it's time to execute. It's time for business, and you have to go and take care of business. You don't have time as the serve is coming at you to think, okay, which side is their weak side? The cross court is safest. I should go cross court now. But wait, their backhand is down the line, and you just cannot do that. So in between points, use that time to take stock of what's going on and come up with a plan. Then go and execute the plan. After that next point, figure out, all right, why did I win that point? Why did I lose that point? Go and set up for the next one. And you have to be aware of what's going on. So certainly be aware of your surroundings, of your opponents. What are you doing well that day? What are you doing poorly at that day? And you need to form your game plan, your battle plan around that. In terms of technique, you need to be as unconscious of that as possible. If you just started learning a new technique, then you might have to be thinking about it. And that's just how it goes. Try to get in as much practice as you can on something new before you go and play a match. But it takes a lot of repetition to make something automatic. So Sean, hopefully that answers your question. Thanks very much for writing in, and thanks very much for listening to the podcast. All right, our next question comes from Charles. You guys remember Charles, right? He first wrote in asking about strategy. He was getting yanked all over the court by his hitting partner, his opponent. And so we started talking about hitting cross court. And I've continued to hear back from him, and he's continuing to improve. It's really great to hear back from all of you guys when something helps you out. And he says, and I'll paraphrase a couple of emails here that we've written back and forth. But he says, Ian, I can tell you not only is your advice working, it's working very well. The cross-court strategy is paying off. I'm so excited. He wrote me a long email describing a recent match that he had with that same partner. And he's starting to win more. He's winning more points. He's winning more games. And he's gotten close to taking sets off his opponent now, which is great. He's forcing his partner to hit down the line more often, and it's a lower percentage shot by playing the directionals and keeping the ball cross court himself. So his question is about taking that pattern, hitting cross court, making your opponents in singles hit down the line, forcing them to try the lower percentage shot. He's now running into a pattern where that's breaking down. He has a weaker side, and he's having problems keeping that side cross court where it should be. And so here's his question. He says, I wanted to ask if you could maybe speak a little on your cross court backhand. That is where I am stuck at my little chess match with my hitting partner. You advised me to hit cross court more. What happens is when I hit cross court to his forehand in the deuce court, and then he says, we're both righties. So he's taking his forehand, he's hitting it cross court, and then his opponent is going down the line to his backhand. Then he says, my backhand is my weakest shot. So when I try to go back cross court with my backhand, it is usually a weak reply. Also, what do you think of a slice backhand cross court? And then I'll just embarrass Charles a little here. He says, P.S., if you are tired of mentioning my name on your podcast, you can just say I'm a regular listener. no problems, Charles. Don't worry about it. It's great to help you out. And it's a great testimony that you can improve your game just by getting good advice and by going and implementing that advice in your game. I'm sure that your testimony here is encouraging to other listeners. You can improve your game by listening to good advice and going and following through and practicing it. So don't worry. I'm proud to say your name because you've improved your game, and that's great. It's great to hear that listeners are becoming better by using the advice that they hear here. All right, so let's talk about your backhand. Now, you ask about slice or topspin. Ultimately, I want you to be able to hit a deep topspin backhand groundstroke cross court. That needs to start becoming a long-term goal of yours to be able to hit. Now, if you can hit slice now and keep it cross court and keep it deep, then go ahead and use that now. Use whatever you can to keep it cross court and keep the ball past the service line. If you can accomplish that, whether it's a slice or topspin or a drive, that's what we're going for. If you can take that down the line forehand from him and hit deep cross court to his backhand, or hit a wide angle with your backhand to his backhand, now you've got him on the run. And if he takes the bait and goes down the line again, now you've got your forehand in open court, cross court, and it just keeps on rolling on top of itself and compounding in your favor. So the keys here are, if we can get it cross court to the corner, back over to his backhand side, and if you can get it deep, that would be outstanding. By hitting a short, weak reply, you give him the opportunity to move in and then attack. There's a huge difference between hitting your ground stroke in front of the service line and hitting it past the service line. We're aiming past the service line with this backhand ground stroke most of the time to keep him pushed back behind the baseline and keep him in a more defensive position. We do not want to hit short in the court. So my ultimate goal for you is to be able to hit a topspin backhand cross court deep in the court. I spend a lot of time on this with my own lessons, my own clientele. When I teach, this is where I aim. This is where I have them practice aiming, is deep in cross court. Now, to be able to do that, you ask about technique specifically. I went over a lot of technique stuff on how to hit topspin with Tomas earlier in this podcast. Basically, the steps you need to make, Charles, are first of all, get yourself turned to the side. We need a good rotation with your body. You should be using mostly your core, mostly your body to power this shot. So first things first, we need to get turned to the side so that you're perpendicular to the baseline. Once that's happened, what we're trying to accomplish is three things with the stroke, three things with the path of your racket. And this is what I teach everybody is in terms of how to hit a correct ground stroke. And you can hit a drive this way, or you can hit topspin this way by exaggerating these three steps. But step number one is the racket needs to get below the ball. Hopefully you're moving your feet well enough that the ball is about waist height. And that means that your racket needs to drop well below your waist, below where the ball is going to be made contact with in relation to your body. Step two is you need to swing upwards towards the ball, and when you make contact, your racket face needs to be perpendicular. It needs to be flat. Talked about that with Tomas. So we're making an upward swing. We're starting from below the ball, low below the ball, and we're swinging the racket upwards to meet the ball with a flat face. Step number three is finish above where the ball is. So we're starting below where the ball is. We're finishing above where we made contact, above where the ball was when we made contact. And in the middle, contact needs to be made with a flat racket face. That's how you drive the ball. We're swinging upwards because we need to lift the ball. Tennis court is 80 feet long. It's 78 feet if you go straight. It's over 80 feet long if you hit cross court from corner to corner. And the net is in the way. And that's 40 feet away and in your way. You need to lift the ball to get it over. If you lift the ball and it goes too far, you didn't hit it too hard. Your face was just too open. You need to close your racket face to keep the ball inside the court, but make sure you continue to lift. So it's an upward swing with a flat racket face. And again, before you make that path with your racket, make sure that you turn your body to the side so that you can use your core to power the shot. You should be using mostly your body for strength. Your arms and your hands should be relaxed, and they're just helping move the racket along its path. Until you start really accelerating a lot and trying to hit topspin, heavy topspin, just keep your arms and your hands relaxed. Use your body to turn forwards at least 90 degrees. That's why we're turning to the side perpendicular, is to use your core to rotate at 90 degrees forwards. Face your target when you're done with your body, with your chest, and use your core to strengthen the shot. I'm not trying to hit at the ball with your arms. They should be pretty relaxed. So, Charles, again, thanks for writing in. Great to hear from you. Now, you're doing absolutely awesome. You're working the pattern. You're working the directionals. And you're starting to win. Now, if we can get this backhand deep in cross court, your opponent's going to be back on the ropes. He's going to have to hit his own deep backhand ground stroke. And if he can't get it back cross court to you, now you have a forehand that you can hit cross court and keep moving him back and forth. A couple of more weeks and you're going to be yanking him side to side just like he was to you a couple of weeks ago. So you're doing a great job. Keep up the good work, and you're going to continue to improve if you keep on implementing the advice that you're getting. Okay, our last question today on the Essential Tennis Podcast is another question from Sean. He asked the question a little bit earlier about what to think about during a point. And this is another good question from him. He asks about working out and getting his body strong for tennis. And he's very active. He wrote an email to me and described his workout routine. I'll go over it briefly here. He says, currently I lift, swim, and bicycle in that order to be physically fit for tennis. Some guys at work have now organized a 2-times-per-week basketball game, which is also taxing. I think I may be starting to overstrain and fatigue myself. On Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Sean lifts. He says he does squats, overhead press, deadlift, pull-ups, bench, rows, dips. And he splits those up over those 3 days and lifts for all those different areas. On Tuesday and Thursday, he plays basketball for about an hour and a half. And then Monday through Friday, he does his tennis as well. He plays in a local competitive ladder as well as other practice sessions. And then he also says that he bicycles to and from work 3 to 4 times per week, which is 7 miles each way. And so his ultimate question is, what would you suggest cutting or changing from this routine to make it more tennis specific? Note that basketball and other organized sports are simply much more fun than individual training, so it's doubtful that I will cut that. Currently, I am planning to change my lifting to Monday, Wednesday only, until tennis season is over. Okay, Sean, well, I'll be happy to answer that for you. I really relate to what you said about organized sports just being more fun. I definitely agree. I've played just about every sport there is, and I agree with you. I'm very, very competitive, and for everybody else out there who's listening, a great way to get in shape for tennis is to play other sports. And also works on other skills needed for tennis, like your footwork, your eye-hand coordination, and that sort of thing. So I definitely agree that playing organized sports is a great way to cross-train. And I used to play basketball in college whenever I got the chance. Basketball is a great workout. Sean actually mentioned that he will typically play point guard when he plays basketball. And it's great for working on your footwork and your movement in general. And it's also good for eye-hand coordination. And it's just a good overall workout, period. Lots of short bursts, which is what tennis is. And that brings me to my ultimate answer to your question. Tennis is an anaerobic sport. Now, let me explain that. Anaerobic means that it's not long distance. It's not endurance so much as it is short bursts. And so if you want to train specifically for improving your tennis, what we need to do is find things that match tennis play as much as possible. And things like biking and swimming, while they're certainly extremely good for you, they're great for your body, they're not very specific to your tennis. Now, if you're a professional player and you're playing 3, sometimes 4-hour matches, don't get me wrong, fitness certainly comes into it, and you have to be aerobically fit in terms of endurance. However, a tennis point typically only lasts around 10 seconds at the most. So what you need to be good at is quick movements, starting and stopping, and being able to go all out for 5-10 seconds and then taking a rest. And then going all out for 10 seconds again and then taking a rest for 15-20 seconds in between. And so your best bet to improve your tennis is going to be things like basketball, where you go in short spurts very, very quickly and very hard, and then you get a little bit of a break. Now, basketball is a little more aerobic than that because you have to run up and down the length of the court, and so it ends up being more aerobic than tennis is, but you get those quick spurts in there, whereas biking and swimming, not so much. Now, certainly, you know, and again, biking and swimming are outstanding. They're great, and you could actually tailor those to meet your needs. You could go in short spurts of either one and then take a break to specifically work on your tennis fitness. But done traditionally, they're definitely an aerobic activity. And so it's not as specific to your tennis. So if it was me, I would cut out the biking and the swimming, or either one or both if you have to cut something. And I would definitely keep the basketball. Not only is it fun, like you said before, and it's a team sport and you get to compete directly against somebody else, but it's more positioned towards your tennis fitness. So it makes a little bit more sense. In terms of the lifting, I think you're doing great. The things you want to focus on the most are your core and your back. Those need to be strong. You're doing great with your legs. That's very important as well. Make sure that you get your shoulder. You're doing that with the overhead press. So you've got just about everything covered. You're working really hard. It's great to see that you're so focused to make yourself a better player. Keep up the good work, and just remember that tennis is more of an anaerobic sport, meaning quick, short bursts with rests in between. It's not so much an aerobic sport. So the biking, the swimming, or anybody else out there who likes to run, those are all great things and they're good for your body, but it's not specifically tennis related activity. So you want to get out there, do stuff like sprints, play basketball. Soccer is good. There's short, quick bursts in soccer with rest in between. So there's lots of different things you can do. Just make sure that it's more built towards fast bursts of energy going all out with a rest in between. Sean, again, thanks for the great questions. Hopefully that answers your question. And thanks very much for being a listener. I appreciate you taking the time to write to me. Okay, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast. Lots of great questions today, or this past week, lots of great questions. Very, very good to hear back from you guys that I've been helping. It's great to hear that people are improving because of the Essential Tennis Podcast, and it's great to see it continuing to grow. Please remember your homework. I would love it if all of you that have appreciated and gotten help from my efforts here on the podcast, I'd love it if you guys would go over and leave me a, comments on iTunes, on the iTunes Music Store. I would really appreciate that a lot. And also remember to go to EssentialTennis.com, the new Essential Tennis website. Make sure to go check that out, and I hope you guys enjoy it. It's going to be up a little bit later today, getting towards late morning now. I don't think it's up quite yet, but it's going to be up by the end of today. Today is Monday. So definitely go check that out. And again, thanks to everybody who's listening. I really appreciate all the downloads and the questions. Let's keep on working at this together. We'll build a good tennis community here where hopefully we get as much information out there as possible. And it's all for you guys, and it's up to you guys. Keep on writing me those questions, and I'll keep working hard at this. And hopefully we can all improve our tennis and our understanding together. All right, take care, everybody. Have a great week, and good luck with your tennis.